All right. Well, welcome back to the first podcast, Critical Mass Podcast of 2012, the last year in the history of the world ever, according to the Mayans. And, of course, you know, the Mayans are already dead, so who's going to argue with them, right? All right. Well, we've got a special treat today. We're setting the theme for the rest of the podcasting year, hopefully.
Last year.
Last year. But we've been enjoying some stuff, and I want to come back to that. On TV, we've been enjoying some shows on TV that have inspired us to podcast for the remainder of the year. Before I get into any of that, I've got a promo that for some poor neglected podcast friends that I've been meaning to help promote. So check this out, and we'll see you again in just a second.
Satisfy your literary craving at bookwormbanquet.com. Brought to you by Radio CSS Media,
your source for family-centered content.
Join your hosts, JD and Nicole, as they review family-friendly literature.
The book we're going to talk about today is called Hope Rising.
The Waters Roar.
A book called An Eye for Glory.
Compelling author interviews.
Talking with Carl Bacon.
Our interview with Kim Meter.
When did you begin writing? Has it always been a passion of yours?
Do you ever ask yourself why you do this?
And as always, the enlightening fun fact.
We're going to jump right into it.
And now it's time for Nicole's Bookworm Fact.
Oh, yes. I'm very excited about today's Bookworm Fact.
Well, I think that is all we have for you this time. If you would like to get in touch with us, there's several ways you can do that. First and foremost, you can check out our website, bookwormbanquet.com.
Bookwormbanquet.com.
That's bookwormbanquet.com.
All right, well, the big news over at Critical Press Media is that we are launching the Atomic Earth 2.0 Kickstarter, If It Kills Me. Now, Kickstarter, if you don't know, is crowdsourced funding that allows creators to actually be able to pay for and produce a high-quality product without, you know, mortgaging an arm and a leg in the process, which is something that appeals to me. And Atomic Earth is the tile-laying board game of strategy and adventure in a world overrun by giant atomic monsters. So if you like giant monsters, especially giant atomic monsters, breathing fire and stomping around the landscape in a world just full of limitless possibility and adventure, Atomic Earth is the place to be. So I'm really excited about the possibility of getting this game funded and produced the way I really want it to be. And the new model calls for introducing the main IP, you know, the main Critical Press IP, the Atomic Earth intellectual property, to the living universe concept, which lets the participants in the Kickstarter to begin with, and then later on everybody who wants to be part of the part of the living universe, to contribute to the future history of the Atomic Earth. So I'm really excited about that. Check out the show notes to find a link to that, or you can visit the Atomic Earth page. You can get there from the Critical Press Media website, which of course is criticalpressmedia.com, and look for the links on the front page to Atomic Earth. All right, now you really want to hear, and I really want to get to the episode where Kurt and I talk about prepping for Doomsday. So without any further ado, or gilding of the lily, or, you know, any more talking on my part, except for the 25 minutes or so that I'm about to talk. Anyway, let's talk about Doomsday Preppers. Welcome back, podcast world. I'm Winston.
I'm Curtis.
And we are here to discuss what is unquestionably the cream of the entertainment crop for the 2012 television season. And I've messed this up twice now, Kurt. What's the name of our show?
Doomsday Preppers on National Geographic Channel.
Doomsday Preppers. And it's related cousin on Discovery Channel, right?
Doomsday Bunkers.
Doomsday Bunkers. Fantastic. Now, of course, this is 2012. Everybody knows this is the last year in the history of the world ever. You know, the Mayans made their calendar and, you know.
Doomsday's upon us.
Doomsday is upon us. Well, there's still some debate, I think, upon the exact day.
Well, yeah, because, you know, mines didn't have leap year figured in.
Exactly.
So it's like it could have happened already, so we didn't know it. And this is purgatory.
This is purgatory. Well, you know what? If
and if you're in
depending
purgatory,
on how subtle doomsday is,
if
we really
purgatory,
go.
Purgatory, you're unhappy, and if you're unhappy,
you go to happy hour. Yeah, yeah. The minute we restart reenacting scenes from Platoon with Charlie Sheen, we know that. Yeah, we know that doomsday is here. But oh, anyway. The show Doomsday Preppers follows selected preppers throughout North America so far.
Three per show.
Yeah, on average, yeah. Three per show. Families who have taken to preparing against a coming disaster that is going to, in some way or another, destroy their way of life. Typically the end result is usually the same, so we'll come back to that in a second, but, The fears are different. The things that people are afraid of vary. And I think the most common one we've seen has been probably economic...
Economic and the solar flare or power grid taken out as a result of.
Okay, yeah,
those are the two. Because it's always been that solar flare thing.
Yeah.
Or EMP, but it's still the same thing.
Right, yeah. Some kind of event precipitates a global economic meltdown as a result of world economies or even just national economy collapsing. People are unable to get basic services or food. And the other most common is solar flare or EMP attack.
All the electronics.
Right. Takes out all the electronics. And as a result, you know, transportation lines are shut down.
No power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, once again, people are unable to get services and food and things like that. And these two at least have some basis in history. We've seen
some logical basis.
Some logical basis. Well, we've seen countries collapse economically before.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But generally these have been
third world
countries or countries that aren't self-sufficient.
Russia.
Yeah, I was thinking
they're the recentest, I guess, or recent major country that did that when they, you know, communism fell.
Russia's a really good example, and that's probably the closest we could come.
Mm-hmm.
I think as far as that goes, America's in a really good position. Because as a country, we have the ability to become self-sufficient. So if is a global economic meltdown...
The wealthy won't let it happen over here. I mean, their money would be worthless. And they would be the first to die.
We have oil reserves.
Mm-hmm.
We might have to lose a few luxuries. You know, Hollywood is not going to let this happen, okay? Hollywood's
We got Corman and Asylum. We don't care no more.
That's right. That's
they
right.
can make it on cheap nothing.
That's right. Closely related to this, people are afraid that the government will take over.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, and I'm left wondering, take over from whom? Because if the
and
government
when,
is...
and if they haven't, who the hell's in charge right now?
Exactly. Who's running the country?
If it ain't the government, then my God.
But yeah, we've actually seen that happen less than 100 years ago. You know, pre-World War II, post-World War I Germany, when the German economic system collapsed, you know, and the Nazi party rose to power, essentially declaring martial law as a way to restart the country. I guess that would be an example of the government taking over.
To an extreme, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what that one chick, you know, from in Salt Lake City, Utah, she said.
Right.
The government would declare martial law.
Martial law. And I think that's what people really mean when they say...
We're going to see how America's most wanted.
Yeah, we probably are. When they say that the government will take over. Some of the extreme ones we've seen repeatedly, which kind of surprised me, catastrophic polar shift.
Yeah.
Catastrophic polar shift causing extreme changes and upheaval.
Weather.
Yep. Mega fault.
Eruption of the mega volcano.
Oh, that's right.
Yellowstone.
Super volcano.
Yeah.
Yellowstone.
Yeah. That was only once, though. I haven't seen it more than once. But,
there were two guys on there. I think we missed an episode.
Yeah, maybe.
Because there was another guy who was afraid that the caldera would erupt.
Mm.
Oh, there was another one of note.
Well, the one with the nuclear nuclear fallout,
yes,
from the Japanese, the seed guy.
Yeah, yeah, he's afraid that even now, as we speak,
nuclear cloud is coming towards the United States, and the California and Oregon and Washington, the states need to be evacuated.
Yeah.
I like to see that get done.
Yeah. Well, where would they go?
Where? California, the surfers wouldn't leave.
No, surfers wouldn't leave. That's right. They'll surf in the glowing green shoes.
Well, they can go to Colorado, Wyoming, Nebraska. They got space.
Yeah, we've seen at least one lady who's afraid of pandemics.
Yeah.
Influenza or Ebola or things like that.
Or something.
I think the first thing that we need to say is that there's no way to downplay or make light of the anxiety that these people are experiencing over these events.
True. It's the only way they feel comfortable with it is prep.
Right.
That's their solution for their anxiety and worries. Like the one lady who's had a nightmare in college, and that set her off to prepping.
But which one was that? It was the lady who had a nightmare in college. Say she was high, and she thought the world was coming to an end.
Yes.
And so she started prepping.
But even so, this is a real motivating anxiety in these people's lives. Whether or not it has any basis in fact, I mean, I can understand the fact that, you know what, you don't want to live in a police state. Nobody wants to live in a police state. And
no.
I guess in an extreme that could happen. We live right here on the Ohio River. We have, in the past year, we have faced flood-level waters, tornadoes. Did we have an earthquake this year? I forget.
No.
I know that every year they call the threat of earthquakes because we live on a fault line.
Yeah. No, I don't think we had that. Or did it? I can't remember.
Yeah. But we've already faced, high flood-level waters and a tornado. Now, at least one tornado. But the response in every case has been the same. Find a bunker, make a bunker, find a bug-out location.
A secure bug-out location,
and dig in and wait for things to blow over and a new world order to establish themselves.
Or where you can set up your new life, like that one family moved from Florida to
yes.
the high mountainous because they were worried about water levels.
Yes.
And they got them a new place. They got farm animals. They're going to have the whole little commune.
There's a lot of wisdom to that.
Oh, yeah.
And, we've seen several of them that have farms built up. I mean, the one hippie hole.
Okay. It's funny to the point because they are hippies. Deep beatniks. That's the funny part with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just the old school 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Hippies. And you watched it, you think you're watching some kind of horror movie begin. Because the one guy makes that one face. Here's the stick! He looked like the guy from Poltergeist 2, played the undead reverend for a second. Oh, yeah.
Well, I still think it's impressive that they managed to purchase an unused missile
silo. I know, he's got a real job somewhere.
Yeah.
With his infield or British old gun, whatever he had was...
But they purchased a silo complex from a missile silo complex from the American government and have refitted the entire place for their whole community.
But it's not the vertical missile silo, it's the horizontal one where the missile raised up, so it's a whole nice flat level.
Huge.
Perfect for making into a, living residence and everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's impressive. These people have done a good job.
Yeah, place looked nice.
I forget what they were afraid of.
Oh, crap.
Economic collapse, I think.
Something like that, because they had the fence set up.
Yeah. And we've seen more than a few of these people are afraid that people are going to turn cannibal pretty darn quick.
That was three of them. Three of those people specifically were worried about cannibalism, and I was like, no. Well, remember, the beatniks, they'll eat those two of their group that just wanted to bring peace and love and positive energy to the group.
That's right.
That was their contribution.
That's right.
They'll eat them first.
But, I mean, you find yourself a secure location and dig in.
Mm-hmm.
The bunker show was built around a guy who, his business is selling bunkers to preppers.
He builds the bunkers, but he also sells weather shelters as well. That's the other main part of their business.
Yeah, and I don't think we've seen a bunker for less than $200,000.
Oh yeah, the last show, the one New York, the ex-cop, hers was under $100,000.
Oh, was it?
And then remember the tactical bunker was like $50,000.
Yeah, but those are a little bitty.
But that's still you want the full sustainable staying there for months. Yes,
yeah,
true.
Exactly.
It was $150,000 for that one. That was the cheapest we saw.
Okay.
Because it was two units, not three, like the one guy wanted for $450,000. It was three huge units.
Holy moly.
But he wanted the foundation, so he's getting,
Yeah, he was dug in. And then, then on Preppers, we had that one company, the guy who was building an underground condominium.
Yes, out of the missile silo.
Oh, man. $2 million
to get in.
Yeah, impressive.
And it's going to be high-end, but he forgot one thing.
It's kind of funny to me, and I had to explain it to the kids, that, these people are not, they're not crazy. Crazy is non-functional.
It's true. They're functioning.
They're not crazy. And they're not even doing something that is unusual even 100 years ago.
No.
I mean, because 100 years ago, you could go many places in the country. There was no running water. There was no electricity. There was nothing like that. Even 50 years ago, my mother grew up without running water or electricity.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so.
Dad, too, down the river.
And that's the largest part of what these people are doing. They're finding ways to grow their own food supplies and to do without state-provided services.
Oh, yeah. They're on their own solar cells, wind power, whatever. Because, I finally saw the episode with the pool.
Yes.
The self-sustaining, environment. Oh, my God, that was beautiful.
He's got a whole arcology in there. Isn't that impressive?
Yeah. I know. They're like, we had the rundown pool. We had to get it.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap.
Tell us what he did with it.
He framed the top, put a roof over it, and made it a self-sustaining.
Put a greenhouse roof over it.
Yeah. Is it a greenhouse?
It's a greenhouse.
Yeah, it was the fabric one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is
that. Fabric, not glass.
Yeah. But they've got fish in their water. They got algae they grow. They feed the algae to the chickens they have.
The
chickens crap, and that feeds the fish. So that's self-sustaining. They grow their plants. They got water provided by that.
Yeah.
They have a solar cell that provides the pumping for the water.
Yes.
To circulate it and everything. And it's just wicked. And they eat fish majority of their time out of their pond. They're already self-sufficient.
Yeah.
They do it regularly. I mean, I saw them like that protein shake out of that algae or whatever they eat. And I was like, damn.
Yeah. Chick dried it in the oven. They like, tastes like lettuce.
Yeah, but then they added the yogurt, though, so that kind of killed it.
Well, they have goats.
Yeah. No, they've opened one of the store-bought containers.
Oh, well,
Yeah, for sure.
They did say they were just...
They got those little goats they can get milk from and everything.
African dwarf goats or something like
something
that.
Yeah, something
like that. Whatever they are.
Yeah, because the kids had to give them names, because if they didn't have names, they weren't pets, and the city wouldn't let them have them.
Right.
So as long as they had names, they're pets.
Right.
Yeah, that's just funny. And they're allowed 10 chickens, but they have 8 just to make sure they're under the radar. That's another thing. They're staying under the radar. Because that way no one wants to target you or, mess up your doings.
I think what impressed me most about that guy is that he's not just prepping for himself. He's preparing to do this for his entire neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, when this happens, my neighbors are going to come to me. It's not my purpose to feed them. It's my purpose to teach them how to feed themselves. But all in all, it's a very entertaining show. It's not just the crazy factor, although that...
it's a certain level of what, the hippie, the one chick who's made sure she's had plenty of birth control and can barter.
Right. The guy who thought that he was going to get mugged for his store of seeds.
Yes, the California guy. God.
Yikes.
He's weird.
The dude that dug a network of spider holes over 200 miles.
Was it 200?
200 miles.
He's got like 100 of them is what it is. Yeah, and I'm like, weird. No. He's going to find a spider hole and park an 8-ton truck on top and just walk away.
Just stay there. Anyway, so the important part out of all of this is that we've begun prepping. yes, indeed. And the most important part out of all of this is that we are going to prep for a new disaster every podcast. And this week, yeah, I can't even go there with a straight face. This podcast, we are prepping for the zombie apocalypse.
When the dead rise, we'll be ready.
Will you?
I got enough ammo.
Good. And there you go.
If I load all my guns, I got enough to hold the fort for hours.
But you know what? This is an acknowledged. This is an acknowledged threat. The CDC published a manual.
I bet you they regret that. They thought, oh, we'll get people to notice this more. Let's do the zombie apocalypse thing.
Zombie apocalypse. You know what?
Yeah, it did.
Their own fault.
Yeah,
so their own fault. They acknowledged it as a legitimate threat. I mean, Max Brooks was called on The Deadliest Warrior as an expert on zombies, acknowledging through the power of television, acknowledging that zombies are a threat. Yeah, this is something that the dead will rise, buddy. You had better be prepared. We had better be prepared. And we've identified three ways to prepare for the zombie apocalypse, to prepare for any apocalypse. And first on our plan is, well, three stages: bug out, yep, dig in, yeah, fight back.
Yeah.
Bug out. Kurt, what's your bug out plan?
I guess grab my head here, because okay. I either got to dig you out or shoot some people.
Or shoot some people. Well, let's see. Bug out. Zombies.
Because I'm right next to the river. I could be there and done. I mean, that's the problem, see, so.
Well, you know what? We might be better off if you, get to the safe house and prep it.
I get to the rendezvous point and prep it and harden it.
That's right. That's right. And meanwhile, when the zombie apocalypse happens, I've got to, throw the kids in, a secure location and get there. Now, my backup plan, I've been preparing now.
The alternate route.
The creek's right out back.
Yes.
That's and zombies can do a lot of things, but they can't swim.
No.
Right? Traditionally.
No, they just walk on the bottom.
Yeah. And Pigeon Creek is not so deep that... I don't know. Pigeon Creek's not so deep or so wide.
It's gotta be the shoreline. If they're, you got to go right down the middle.
Yeah. So I might be better off putting the kids in the van, you know, putting the family in the van, and mm-hmm. just driving there, assuming that the roadways aren't choked, aren't congested.
Mm-hmm. Your location. You need to change your location, yes.
Got
to
have two. Well, you got to have multiple bug-out plans anyway.
The experts say your location is bad. Yeah, being nearer in a city, you're screwed in the case of a zombie apocalypse. That's in the zombie survival guide.
That's true.
You're in a city or an apartment, get out.
So bugging out, throw them in the car and drive.
Mm-hmm.
Backup plan is get onto Pigeon Creek out back and paddle down to the river.
Doesn't sound so good, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not like I have a whole lot of options, and I'm very much afraid that those are going to wind up being my two bug out plans for pretty much any occasion.
Yeah, because I mean, what's the third one? You go on foot and avoid them. I mean, that's the only other one.
See, on foot is not a good option.
No,
for zombies,
because you don't know if they're going to be the fast zombies or the slow walking ones.
Yeah, and I was kind of worried about that too. And depending on the season,
I mean,
if it's the middle of summer and Pigeon Creek is dried up and low.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, there's no way that's going to do me any good at all. And if it's the height of the rainy season, and that thing is fast and flowing at the height of flood season.
You won't be able to get past the bridges at the end towards the river, because the water level will be up there where you're hitting the bridge. So.
Hitting the bridge, hitting trees.
Hitting everything.
Yeah, so, I mean, that might be more dangerous than zombies. I don't know. Yeah. So that's the bug out. Dig in. We have identified our ideal zombie dig in location to be the middle of the Ohio River.
Barge.
Yeah, that's right. What are some of the advantages of the barge scenario?
Well, we're in the middle of the water. There ain't no zombie walking to us or reaching us. That thing's deep.
That's true.
The river is a means of travel.
And so we can go to places where there are fewer zombies?
Yeah, or places that are civilized to find people or something.
Okay.
But we can still get somewhere.
Okay.
And it's water. We need water.
You need water.
And there's fish in that water.
That's true. It's food.
Yeah.
It's fresh water. It's sanitation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because a river can carry away waste elements.
Yeah, it'll be flowing always. Mm-hmm. We can have our little river city.
Oh, my gosh. I still think that some of those catfish in the river, I still think we can solve our motive problem just by hooking up a team of catfish and letting them tow the barge.
But getting them going as a pack, that'd be the hard part.
Getting them to stop, you mean?
Well, we're going to stop eventually. I mean, they'll tire out.
Yeah, that leads to the last part of our prep is to fight back. And of course, zombies classically kill zombies with a bash to the head or shooting them in the head.
Oh, yeah.
And part of our fighting back is to dig in. Because if the zombies are swimming or floating or something, I mean, you've got the height advantage being above them. You can hit the head.
The load we'll put on the boat barge, it'll be so above the water still, they'll not be able to climb up it. It'll be a smooth surface.
Exactly.
And then we'll be just sitting there going, bet you nail that one, Zay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, ammunition is going to be a concern. I know you're fairly stocked right now, but
yeah, but I ain't nowhere dent. No, we'll have to get reloading supplies for some common ammo, and that'd be it. Or stockpile up on the stuff we know we'll need.
We have a plan. If you don't have a plan, you're already zombie food,
or a zombie.
And Destiny has been quietly listening. And she has some concerns also. I occurred to you of the note that she passed. Do you want to share some of Destiny's concerns with us?
Zombie apocalypse. Don't go to Japan during zombie apocalypse. Main reason, zombie ninjas.
Yeah, that would be bad. That's a concern. Bad.
Can't hear them coming. All of a sudden, it's like in the movies. They pop up. That's
it.
Zombie ninja.
That's a concern, yeah. Japan, not the place to be. Anyway, so that's our bug out, dig in, fight back plan for the zombie apocalypse. So next week we are prepping for
the Arctic Blast.
Arctic Blast, yes. And if you didn't see this film, it is based on the premise that a solar flare caused a super cool blast of air from the sun. Yes. A super cool blast of air from the sun hits the Earth through a hole in the ozone layer and begins freezing the planet.
Extreme freezing.
So, sci-fi original movie. It's awesome.
Oh, totally.
But so we're prepping for Arctic Blast. I don't think we're not afraid of a super cooled blast of air from the sun. Now, come on, people. That's the stuff of movies. No, we're concerned about that rogue planet.
Yes.
Yeah, when the rogue planet in our system passes close enough to destabilize the Earth's orbit and knock us further away from the sun and things begin to freeze, we'll be prepped.
Mm-hmm.
Will you?